This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
That would be one place to see what Voices is doing.
I've been speaking with Kathy Breen of Voices for Creative Nonviolence about her experiences visiting and staying in Iraq for extended periods of time. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Voices from the Middle East. Thank you for listening.
The air is clear, and I can perceive the whole world is smiling. Life is sublime, and when you dare to go up in the air and leave the earth far behind you, as I step and leap and skip into that space.
Good morning. This is Michelle Schroeder Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM. And this morning in the studio, we have with us a local small businessman, social activist, concerned parent, musician, environmentalist, and added to the list several years ago, filmmaker Matt Briggs, whose film, in its new edited state, and I'm sorry, we're having some mic problems, is playing this Saturday, April 13th, at the Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark. The name of the film is Deep Green, and Matt will be introducing the film and will be able to answer questions following the presentation. So, again, good morning, Matt, and welcome to KBOO. Like I said, we're just having a little audio difficulty, but let's talk a little about your evolution and how some of the ideas can take hold for others, because the way I introduced you was that the filmmaker part is very, very recent in terms of your evolution.
Yeah. It's interesting how if you're an environmentalist all your life, and then all of a sudden you decide to do a little film on a weekend to try to show somebody how to live lighter on the planet, and you think it's going to be 5 days and maybe get some guys from L.A. and make it for like $10,000 or $20,000, and it turns into 7.5 years and $2.5 million.
And a huge chunk of your life and commitment of energy and effort and time.
Basically spend all the money you ever saved in your life. Because as you see the problem for what it is, it's for all the marbles. You know, we're going into a real life apocalyptic reality show here, going into the tunnel, and people just get a taste of what it's like with less than 1 degree rise in temperature, with all the hurricanes and tornadoes and forest fires and floods and droughts. This century, we're geared to go up 10 degrees. And, you know, when that happens, the consequences are extreme.
Yeah. Well, and again, the reason that I think it's really important to give a history and a background of kind of how you came to this is that you start with some ideas that people can incorporate into their own life. And that also is kind of the movie is, and we'll talk more about the movie after we talk a little about your relationship to it. Many of the KBOO listeners have seen it before, but I want to remind you that this is a new edited edition. And also, you've got lots of friends that are supporting it at the Multnomah Meeting of Friends, the Northwest Earth Institute, Oregon PSR, the West Hills Friends Church, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, Interfaith Power and Light. Lots of people co-sponsoring it. So you start to get a feeling that there's people out there that continually are trying and want to get the word out and want to hear what you have to say. And support this kind of movement. And this is just kind of how it bubbles up, ground up.
Yeah, Paul Hawkins keeps saying, you know, there's 2 million organizations worldwide that he can count that are working on this problem. Just yesterday in Rolling Stone, Bill McKibben wrote an article called The Fossil Fuel Resistance, which as you start seeing a collection of people working on stopping fracking, stopping coal terminals, stopping tar sands, mining stuff, and then divestiture from fossil fuel companies in college endowments. And pension plans, the people of conscience who have pension plans, you know, like state employees and so forth in California. If you start taking away the money to those guys, it actually makes that really makes it happen. When we started the movie, we thought, you know, you make a good argument, people see it, they'll change. It turns out that this is a world of power politics and corporate machine thinking, where doing the right thing is not on the dial.
Right.
They're there by their philosophy to make money, and they'll do whatever they have to do, and they are doing whatever they have to do, including, you know, like deception campaigns and buying lobbyists and all this stuff. So you have to meet them on their turf, and that's really the change from making the movie to an action plan, and that's where we're headed now, is Deep Green is going to be just a tool that we're going to send out. Right now it's being used in all the schools in San Francisco and in Seoul, Korea, to show the kids different ideas of what a future would look like if you didn't have fossil fuels. How do you get off fossil fuels? What would you have to change? And, you know, it's how you think about energy and using less energy, how you think about clean energy, how you think about what you eat, how you think about how you insulate your house, you know, what kind of air you have, the devices you use in your life, the whole idea of leaving things plugged in, you know, like standby electronics. And one of the things we're going to work on, which I think is pretty exciting, that we're in this group, the Quaker Coolers and some other churches locally actually are going to volunteer. We're going to start doing the first step of our 12-step program to get off your carbon addiction in 5 to 10 years, is to do a mass buy of LED lights, you know, containers by the community. Like, you know, the South, like the Portland neighborhoods have been buying solar panels in mass and getting 10 or 20% off. We can get 50% off. We buy LED lights. And LED lights are 10% of the electrical use. So if you unplug your standby electronics, which is there's 20 devices in your house that are on all the time, and you change your LED lights in an afternoon, you can knock off 15 to 25% of all your electric demands in like an afternoon. And the whole grid of the United States is only 36% coal now. So you can knock out, if everybody did this, you know, everybody did this, in an afternoon, you can cut out half the coal plants in the United States. So and all this is quickly paybackable. For every light bulb, you save $200 for the life of the bulb. So this is the number one thing, except for not flying, that McKinsey Global Institute says to do for bang for the buck. You know, so go into an action phase here to basically unplug from these guys who want to keep burning fossil fuels, because it really comes down to they're deciding to make money and hurt our children. So we have to stop that.
Yeah. That collectively is the only way that there's going to be the opportunity.
And from the bottom up. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't stop working on international treaties for fossil fuel stuff. It doesn't mean you can't work on changing the regulations at the national level. At the state level, there's still some exciting stuff happening in Oregon, this and that. But if you look at what the Koch brothers with ALEC are doing now, they're trying to reverse the renewable portfolio standards in all of the Republican-dominated states right now, which are basically renewable portfolio standard is a pathway to become all renewable energy. You say, okay, 10% by 2010, 20% by 2020. By law, you have to get there some way. And California is leading this. And they're going to be up to 40% by 2025. They're almost like a European country. Oregon's maybe 25. But anyway, if you mandate the change, then the utilities have to find a way. And they're trying to reverse that. Anyway, we have to meet power with power and take away the money from these guys.
Well, and one of the most important avenues that you've talked about and that you provide information and that the movie does is it really needs to start with the understanding that it's possible. Because, again, and that it's occurring simultaneously. It's not that our kids are getting necessarily the propaganda, although that's true from another side, but they're not getting a steady diet of what is possible or what the takeaway should be from schools or social activities or the, you know, the media, the way it's yeah. been kind of dominated and controlled. The issue has subsided as the economy has reared its head. And so speak to that a little bit. I know you do in the movie, you give examples, and there's a very student-friendly push in it that allows people to learn from it.
Yeah, we tried to make it an easy ride. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 20 minutes of animation by Bent Image Lab locally here. In fact, one of the in the last 3 years, we've been in 50 film festivals around the world and won 10 of them. And one of the things that happened was one of the animations was up for the Academy Award for Best Animated Short in 2011. The krill is gone. About ocean acidification, what happens when you have a lot of carbon in the air and it mixes with the ocean and it makes carbon dioxide with ocean, makes carbolic acid, and it starts to pull off the shells from the backs of all the shelled animals. And at the Oregon coast right now, they can't grow baby oysters anymore. They have to start them somewhere else because they can't grow their shells. Already, they thought this would be 2050. That's a $1 billion industry, the oyster industry in the United States. So the effects of not doing anything, the costs of not doing anything are going to cost way, way more. As Bill Clinton puts it, you know, it's a lot cheaper to fix the global warming than to burn up the world, you know. I mean, it's just a cheaper cost-benefit analysis at this point, you know. I mean, Hurricane Sandy was $60 billion. You know, you're going to be having, well, a couple of those a week.
And not to mention the drought and everything that we deal with every day. But again, I think the hard part for environmentalists and the difficulty getting it out in the world as a memes is that it's, and I think it was Paul Ehrlich that said it's like brown noise. I mean, you can't really identify it. It's just kind of part of it, like you say, until it reaches that crucial point where the industries themselves are now saying, well, where's our protection, i.e. the oyster industry? Then comes the opportunity to say, well, this is the thread, the taking the coal through here, the pollutants in the air,
And there are green corporations just recently. I mean, yesterday, I think Nike, Intel, some others, basically they're starting to push back against the fossil fuel, and the old Chamber of Commerce, you know, has changed. So that's, of course, the fossil fuel Chamber of Commerce, and these guys have pulled out. So corporations are starting to see, you know, sustainability is sustainability. It really is. I mean, this is for real. And, you know, the movie is pretty much just an introduction of what things would look like if you really cared. I mean, first you have to care, but... And then it's a kind of a step-by-step thing. I mean, this is how you unplug. This is how you make your house net zero. This is how you go to not using fossil fuels for food. This is how you stop using oil in cars and trains. It's funny. I just got back from Europe 2 days ago. And, you know, Germany and especially France nobody drives cars anymore. I mean, the subways were jammed. The high-speed trains were jammed and running the subways every 3-4 minutes. The high-speed trains every half an hour. Other trains go in every direction. The busiest place in the city was the trains in the metro station. And people walk when you do that. So nobody's overweight. You know, very interesting thing of the side effect benefits of going in these directions. But, you know, we have to reforest the world. We have to stop deforestation, which brings it up to, you know, if you really look at this, the main causes of deforestation are cutting down trees to build cattle ranches and to grow soy for cattle. So if you really want to stop deforestation, folks, you have to eat less meat.
Yeah.
Which is a real curveball. 20% of the carbon emissions are methane burps from cows and pigs and stuff. That's a real weird one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's the kind of information that, like I said, it's hard to tie it all together, but it's all tied together. And I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Matt Briggs, filmmaker and local businessman, social activist, concerned parent, and all of the above. His film, his new edited edition of Deep Green, will be showing at 7 p.m. on April 13th, this Saturday at 4312 Southeast Stark, which is the Multnomah Meeting House. And he'll not only be introducing the film, but he'll be available for questions afterwards, too. So, again, this has been a real evolution for you. You didn't start out as a filmmaker. You didn't start out as being that involved, but you have two kids. You saw that there was something that could be done. And so I was taken with the fact that the 12-step program that you have, which is, again, available. Matt, tell them where they can find this online.
Deep Green Movie website. It's got all this literature up there. And you know, if anybody wants to, this is another part of what's going on Saturday. On Sunday, anybody who comes to the movie is welcome to go through my house and see how everything was done. We're going to have a tour starting at 2 o'clock. So if you come to the movie, we'll let you know where that is. And at that time, after that, we're going to meet together with volunteers, and there's probably 20 people already coming, who want to start this action plan.
For their own self.
Yeah. I mean, and we're going to feel our way into this, but some people will throw the movie out to 2,000 organizations as a free learning tool. We'll contact Green Media, try to crank up this idea here of people unplugging from the man. I believe we'll have legs. I believe we'll have legs. And the idea of everybody I talk to about community buys of LED lights by the container load at a third to half off, everybody's behind it. I think you can really make a difference and set the tone and build community. And then then once you have the organization going, you just move to the next step. So over 5 to 10 years, you eliminate your fossil fuel addiction and take away, I mean, you're unplugging from the guys causing the problems and plugging into the guys with the solutions. So that's all positive, all upbeat, and the movie's upbeat. It's an easy ride. We don't talk about, you know, it's nothing like The Inconvenient Truth where, you know, we're really screwed. It's basically the answer. And what is possible.
It's the
and
possibility.
What needs to happen.
Yeah, it's not only a call for the order of what needs to happen, but it also focuses on the possibilities that are available when you think in that way, which is, like you say, an anecdote to how demoralizing and depressing and controversial some of the environmental narrative has been, because at the same time it's dire. If you allow that to get in front of doing anything, then all, like you say, the small steps that need to start to change the world won't happen. One of the 12 steps is the first afternoon unplug, and then you talk about the first month, become less of a consumer and more of a restorer, and some ways that, you know, that can happen. You go through and say first project to work on replace your lights with LEDs.
And this is where you can start to get into the community projects.
Get a little broader, a little bigger.
Do it together.
Do it together. And then in the first 6 months, start the transition to energy sipping appliances. Tell us a little about.
Yeah, you know, like refrigerators are probably the biggest appliance in your house. If your refrigerator is over 10 years old, it's probably using three times as much as a new refrigerator. So as things break, you know, I mean, or if they're really old, just replace them.
You can.
Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody's got their budget, but if you were going to change one thing, the refrigerator is the biggest thing. Next one, you know, washing machine. As it wears out, the front load washers use much less, half as much electricity, half as much water. And they have a spin of, you know, 1,000 RPM. So when you put clothes in a dryer,
they're already less saturated. Yes.
So, you know, you're just starting to get smart with the way you use energy. When you turn stuff off, I'm saying, you know, like your cable box is 28 watts. You know, it's on all the time. It's like a light bulb on in your house. You know, your TV set, your microwave, all these things with little lights on.
Digital readout. Yeah.
Your telephone charger. You know, stereo. All this stuff. There are different ways to unplug this stuff. You can use power bars. You can do handheld remote things with little antennas from Radio Shack. But turn them off. I mean, it's getting up to be 10% of the electric load. You know, I mean, you know, Apple's not putting a 340,000 square foot data center at Prineville because nobody's using electronic online stuff. That's coal energy. You know, I mean, that's a lot of energy they're using for every time you're using your computers and your digital stuff and all that. So just use them when you need them. Don't just leave them on. Just be smart about it. You know, it's the only way we're going to get to 80 or 90% reduction in carbon use.
Well, again, I want to remind our listeners that Matt's movie is Deep Green, and it will be showing at 7 p.m. this Saturday, April 13th at the Multnomah Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark. What a great coalition of a lot of different people that have, you know, given you support and vice versa. What an interesting trajectory from where you started to where you are. Can you give us, just in the brief time that we have left, a little idea of where you think that this is going to be 3 to 5 and in your place in it, in the near term and then the years out, et cetera, et cetera? I know that Jeff Merkley has worked with you locally and in the Senate. And are there things that you feel hopeful or less hopeful about or that we need to support and do?
Yeah, it's funny. Senator Merkley, I gave him 25 books on environmental stuff, and his wife was telling me, you know, and he's got these things stacked up. This is when he's running next to the bed. You know, he falls asleep with these things on it. So, and he's really gotten it. He's really, it's a great thing to see. He's got the environmental bug. I see the rest of my life working on this. I mean, what else is better than saving civilization and for your children and not turning everything into, you know, like Darfur, you know, let's do it.
Good idea. We just had someone who called in and said, you know, hang your clothes instead of use a dryer. You know, there are many, many things. And of course, this is what's going to happen Sunday. This is what's going to happen Saturday evening. And this is what can happen, is the contribution of community to each other to get the best ideas out there, to remind each other of why you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I tried hanging my clothes for a year, and in the end, I just put another solar panel on my roof because that way it's all renewable, and time-wise, labor-wise, everybody's got to make their own choices. But I just put another panel on for the dryer.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways
And certainly, and they're going to be, and this is where I think it's really important in terms of the local action. It's going to be unique to Portland at what stage and what development they can do, as opposed to Southern California, which has an entirely different need and want. Not entirely different, I shouldn't say that, but the local needs can be addressed far better in the community, like you said, from the ground up, and the ideas.
I think it's a consciousness building thing too. You know, I mean, people feel so helpless right now. I know a guy, I know we don't have much time, but a guy was on Bill Moyers the other day, was talking about there's six different types of personalities of people who get this in different ways. 20% of the critical thinkers get it, but they don't know what to do. 30% get it, but they don't think it's an important thing. 30% say, well, it's there, but doesn't affect me. And then 10 or 20% are vociferous anti, because they make their living off fossil fuels, mm-hmm. usually, mm-hmm. or, you know, have some. So, I mean, you have to meet people on where they're at. And I think the key to this is that Deep Green could be an educational tool to show people that there is a way, and then you develop an action plan that goes with it, not just a movie and forget about it, an action plan that goes with it so you actually accomplish your goals.
Well, thank you so much for all your effort, energy, time, and commitment. I mean, it really is the story of a local guy who's really all in, and we are all the direct beneficiary of it. I want to remind everybody that I've been speaking with Matt Briggs about his movie Deep Green, which will be showing at 7 p.m. April 13th, which is this Saturday, at the Multnomah Meeting House, which is at 4312 Southeast Stark. You can also go to Deep Green the Movie on the website. And again, this is a call for action and at least thought. This is a good place where you can meet up with other people and generate that kind of enthusiasm. I want to thank everybody for listening. Speaking of community, this is your community, KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10 on Flashpoints. Air Cascadia is off today. Activists in more than 15 U.S. cities protest and fast in solidarity with the hunger strikers in Guantanamo. Also, an update on the treatment of Palestinian political prisoners, many now on hunger strike as well. A report on a national protest against drones planned for Saturday in Washington, D.C., and an update on Exxon's Arkansas tar sands pipeline gush. At 11 a.m. on the Digital Divide, Rabia Yemen interviews Howard Bloom, author of The God Problem. They discuss secular shamanism, aspiring towards omniscience, LSD, doing the work of the universe, Prince, Amanda Palmer, leptones, mindgasms, bar and God jokes, the universe, and so much more. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you missed it, you can still contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned for Flashpoints.
Flashpoints, activists in more than 15 U.S. cities protest and fast in solidarity with the hunger strikers at Guantanamo. Also, we'll have an update on the treatment of Palestinian political prisoners, many now on hunger strike as well. We'll report on a national protest against drones planned for Saturday in Washington, D.C., and we'll have an update on the Exxon Arkansas tar sands pipeline gash that continues to wreak havoc. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We go back to the situation outside Little Rock, Arkansas, where this spill, this March 29th rupture of Exxon's Pegasus pipeline continues to wreak havoc, according to the attorney general there. We don't know if these are the facts, because it's only the attorney general and Exxon that knows anything, but the attorney general says Exxon suffered a 22-foot-long gash that led to the rupture that gushed up to around, I guess, 300,000 gallons of tar sands, thicker type of crude moving through those older pipes. Joining us for an update is Eric Mole, is an activist, campaigner with Tar Sands Blockade. He's been there with a film crew trying to hold the locals accountable. It's not easy because, as I said, this is sort of a no-go zone, no-fly zone. Nobody goes there except those that are okayed by Exxon. So we don't even really have an independent monitor, and journalists are having a hard time as well. So we're delighted to have you back, Eric Mole, Tar Sands Blockade campaigner. There was a storm last night. What did that do to the already troubling situation around the various environs?
Well, it was a pretty big storm. There were some tornadoes that touched down in other areas. Thankfully, none of them came through the spill zone, but a lot of water came down, and the hydrology is actually kind of interesting here. Lake Conway is a man-made lake formed by the damming of a creek here. And in order to keep all the homes around it from flooding, whenever it rains, they have to release a lot of that water through the dam. And we were out reporting as the storm was coming in. And it's pretty clear that it was spreading the contaminants further. We found evidence of oil in the Bell Slough Wilderness area, and just in a lot of waterways that do ultimately lead to the Arkansas River, but we haven't received back any